listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Pardon me, I'm sneezing. I will try to push the sneeze button when I sneeze, but I just, you know, that emergency stuff, you know, that powdered vitamin C, I just put it in a glass of water and took a good sniff of it. And, you know, it just like, there's a lot of things you shouldn't put up your nose, and emergency is one of them. Even accidentally. Okay. I spent 2 hours today. Actually, I spent the morning on Brazilian television. We'll tell you about that later on when it comes out. Tonight, Sam is recording my TV show. Actually, I think as we speak right now, for Free Speech TV, the evening show, The Big Picture for Free Speech TV and RT. So that he and on our team from you know, who put that together can go to the book signing tonight at 7 o'clock at Politics and Prose, out at the 5,000 block of Connecticut Avenue, which should be great fun. But I spent 2 hours after I got off Brazilian TV. I went back to the boat. I'm sitting there with Louise. Went back home, and I'm signing book plates for autographed copies of Crash of 2016. And so I'm sitting there for 2 hours signing books, and I had the TV on, and I watched 2 hours of, I don't want to personalize this because I don't want it to sound like it's an attack, but I do want to talk about it. I think this is a really important conversation to have. I watched 2 hours of a television network that many of us who watch this kind of show also watch, a commercial television network, shall we say. And I was, as always, you know, impressed by the charm and insight and dignity of both the hosts and the guests and some of the topics that were discussed. But I'm also deeply troubled. And I'm sorry, I'm going to have to blow my nose for just a second. Hang on just a second. This is, stay away from that emergency stuff, you know, or at least drink it like this. And here's what troubled me. The first hour was all about Detroit. Okay? So there was, and the entire hour wasn't Detroit, but it was the feature of the show. And they had on, the video of Kevin, what's his name, the new, you know, emergency manager. And they had on the new mayor of Detroit, and they had a panel discussion and all this. And for an hour, more or less, or a good chunk of time, I'm watching this while I'm signing away. And it occurred to me, nobody has mentioned the fact that Detroit would not be in bankruptcy if we did not have insane trade policies in the United States. Nobody has mentioned the fact that auto workers in Germany make $54 an hour on average and are virtually 100% unionized, and yet new hires into the auto industry in Detroit, while they're making better than, you know, the $9 an hour at McDonald's or Walmart, they're starting out at $14 an hour. Nobody even brought it up. And I'm like yelling at the TV saying, why don't you explain why Detroit is going bankrupt? And instead, it became this long discussion of race, and, you know, with the best of intentions. And in fact, it was actually a very thoughtful. Michael Eric Dyson continuously blows my mind with the depth of his intellect. But it became a discussion of race, which arguably to a right winger watching this network, and this is not the right wing network, to a right winger that watching this network, might cause one to think or suggest or say or imply or whatever that somehow Detroit is going bankrupt because it's like 80% African American, which is like, I mean, yeah, we can talk about race in America. We can talk about the oppression of people of color in this country. We can talk about how, but why not, if you're going to do that, why not use that as a stepping off point to point out that when the banksters were out there doing the liar loans, and these were liar loans where they weren't asking people to lie, the banks were lying. They were saying, all you need to do is sign this form. We'll fill it out for you. And then they were filling it out with the lies. Because they needed the, you know, they needed these mortgages so that they could securitize the supposed income stream from the mortgage payments. I told you yesterday about how they're doing the exact same thing now, only with rental properties. So if you're going to go to race in Detroit, why not point out how the banks singled out minority neighborhoods and low-income neighborhoods? And by the way, they're doing that again now with this, with these buying these houses for rental. They singled out low-income and minority neighborhoods as prey in this predatory game. No discussion of that. So here we have the two things in my mind. Now, maybe I'm wrong, and if I am, please call me and set me straight. Tell me what I'm missing here. But I listened to an hour-long discussion, or damn near an hour-long discussion, about Detroit and the loss of democracy, and isn't it terrible that Kevin Orr is a little dictator, and you know, all that. You know, you've heard that before on this show. You know, we've had this kind of, these conversations. But there was no discussion about how our trade policies are deindustrializing this country, how Detroit was built as an industrial city, how Detroit could continue to exist as an industrial city. There was no discussion about urban farming in Detroit and much of the urban renewal and renaissance that's actually, you know, a lot of really good stuff is happening in Detroit right now. A lot of it very community-based. Now, there's no big corporations making money on it. And maybe, I don't know if that's why it wasn't discussed or just wasn't on the radar screen. And but then there was no discussion of our trade policy and no discussion of the explicitly racist policies of the banks. So that was the first. The second hour I was sitting there signing books for the Free Speech TV fund drive. Sitting there on the couch in a boat, they call it the saloon or the salon. I've never figured out it's S-A-L-O-O-N, but it's, they don't call it a living room because, you know, half of it's your kitchen, half of it's your dining room. It's like these little tiny rooms. But in any case, I sit there watching the TV. The second hour was about the Obamacare website. And all, you know, and literally it was an hour long show about the Obamacare website. And the discussion was, oh, thank God they finally got this thing up and they got a million hits and, you know, they're getting this together and isn't. And again, there was not one discussion, not one person, nobody mentioned the fact that the Obamacare website would not be having these problems if it wasn't for Republican sabotage. What the hell is wrong with calling out the Republicans? I don't get it. If this was Fox News, it would have been all about, and it was George W. Bush trying to do Medicare Part D, and the Democrats were sabotaging it. It would have been wall-to-wall Democrats sabotage on Fox News. You know that. Why did nobody mention the fact that you've got a bunch of Republican governors who said, nah, we're not going to do an exchange. Screw that. Even when they brought up the issue about how the back end is not talking with the insurance companies, I'm yelling at the screen. It's because they didn't have to in the first place. It wasn't designed to do that. These Republican governors screwed them. And so now you've got a federal website, healthcare.gov, that is having to do not just the work of the federal government, which was the original goal, which is simply to hand you off to one of the 50 states, but the work of 30 states on top of it. Because of Republican sabotage. And it was never mentioned.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And I don't mean to be criticizing this television network because it's not just them. It's everywhere. You don't find this stuff in the New York Times. Outside of Paul Krugman, nobody's talking about this. So what's the deal? What's the deal with the media? Why are they not calling them? The right is so good at this. You know, in California, the California Republican Party is sending people to a phony baloney sign up for Obamacare website. that says terrible things about Obamacare? Are you sure you want to do this? And stuff like that. I'm not making this up. This is the Republican Party in California. They're actually doing this. They've got a phony baloney website that sounds like the Obamacare website in California to discourage people from signing up. You know, it used to be in America that when people among us rooted for our country to fail, we called them traitors. How is this not treason? Or at least sedition. It's not treason. How is this not sedition? Rooting for your country to fail. We've got an entire political party now. There's a reason Congress's approval rating is down to 6% now. More people like cockroaches in their houses than like members of Congress. I can't imagine anybody liking cockroaches in their houses, but apparently there's a cockroach lobby. Who knows? But the point is that it's actually probably a fairly suspect statistic. I would not quote that anywhere. But why aren't the Democrats pointing this out? Why aren't they pointing out that the Republicans are sending people to phony websites? Why aren't they pointing out that the reason why the main reason why the Obamacare, you know, even President Obama, he comes out and he goes, well, you know, federal procurement is difficult and we should have done a better job and I'm sorry, it's my fault. Okay, that's nice. You know, it's very big of you to take responsibility. But it's the damn Republicans and the damn Republican governors who said, no, we're not going to set it up an exchange. We're going to let you do all the work for us. And then you get states like Mississippi, where not only do they not set up the exchange, but they say, you know, we're even going to make it hard for the insurance company. So you only end up with a couple of half-assed programs being available. Rachel did point that out on her show last night on that network. She's taking names and kicking ass. But I guess during the day, it's like people are just trying to be the news. Let's be the news. Well, I'm telling you, the news is that the Republicans are engaged in sedition. You have an organized political party rooting for the destruction of the United States of America, who cheer as unemployment goes up. Who I just got an email from Bob Borisage, speaking of good organizations worthy of giving money to, which I did. I guess I'm outing my donations now. Bob Borisage and Roger Hickey and R.J. Eskow are the Center for America's Future, or not Center for Project for America's Future, whatever it is. Ourfuture.org is their website, and it was like, do you realize that, you know, if this sequester, if everything just keeps on going, if the Republicans don't do anything, which seems to be their plan, there's going to be another 600,000 people laid off next year, which is more pain and more suffering for the United States. And the Republicans are cheering for this. What is wrong with these people? How can this not be anything other than sedition? And why, when the television networks, for God's sake, why? I'm sorry, I'm far more obscene today than I normally am, and my apologies if you have an 8-year-old in the backseat. I'll try to dial it back. I normally do. It just so angered me to watch 2 full hours of cable network television on the topic of Detroit going down in flames and Obamacare looking like maybe they're starting to get their act together, and nobody mentioning the fact that Detroit went down in flames because of insane trade policies that were initiated under Richard Nixon, that were put on steroids by Ronald Reagan, and frankly, you know, Bill Clinton signed NAFTA, GATT, and the WTO, and maybe that's why they're not talking about it. I don't know. But he ought to be man enough to stand up and say it was a mistake. And I think he probably is. Although maybe not. I mean, we got TPP coming down the road. Really? But there was no discussion of that whatsoever about the impact of our trade policies on Detroit. There was no discussion whatsoever of the impact of the banking crisis on Detroit and the explicit racial profiling isn't even the right word. What do you call it? Targeting of minority communities by banksters. Because in many cases, these people were first-time homeowners, so they really didn't know how to read a mortgage statement. I mean, they hadn't gone through it. They hadn't been through it. Oh, here's 22 pages of fine print. Read it. Sign it. You got 5 minutes. Really? Oh, and half of it's not filled out. Don't worry. Our vice president will sign it, a.k.a. robo-signer, Debbie Do-Right, or whatever her name was. That woman who signed something like, what, 50,000 of these things? She got paid $10 an hour to do it? And Jamie Dimon's not in jail? Are you seriously telling me this? And this was not in the news. I'm watching the news, and none of this is in the news. That's why Detroit's going down the tubes. Our trade policy and the banks went after them. And then I'm watching this hour on Obamacare, and nobody is talking about how the Obamacare website is groaning under the weight of having to do not just Washington, D.C.'s work, but Mississippi's work and Michigan's work and Wisconsin's work and Ohio's work. I may have my states wrong, but you get the point. 30 Republican states.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
It is sabotage. Obamacare is being sabotaged by the Republicans aggressively, methodically, state by state, not to mention the Koch brothers. Nobody will mention it. Benedict in our chat room says, Tom, now you know why I can't watch the news anymore. Gustav Mahler says, thanks for saying the word sabotage. Yeah. Why is it that you have to go to a relatively small universe of progressive radio and TV to actually hear a conversation about what I think is like a really huge issue? I'm not talking about obscure stuff here. This isn't, you know, we're not talking about whether or not there are chemtrails, right? You know, we're not talking about whether or not, you know, the 10th Amendment really means this, that, or the other thing. We're talking about everybody in the country having health care and an entire political party being devoted to sabotaging that. And we're talking about why Detroit failed. And the complicity of two political parties in that. Although the Republicans were certainly leading that crowd. And why is that not being more discussed? So a lot of you wanted to weigh in on this, so let's get into the conversation here. Nick at Cliffside Park, New Jersey. Hey, Nick, what's up?
Greetings, Tom. I think that you probably are asking rhetorical questions because I suspect you could spend as much time answering it as you've done asking them. But you look at MSNBC, you know, there's a reason the Young Turks are no longer on that air. There's a reason Keith Olbermann is no longer on that air. There's a certain line you cannot cross. It's corporate media. It's owned by big corporations. And from their point of view, they want to market advertising. You know, they want to advertise to a certain segment of the market so they can profit off of us. Yeah. But they don't really want to spread anything that could actually change the system.
Well, Nick, you know, respectfully, and I'm no shill for MSNBC. Keith, I think, and Chink, for that matter, I don't think either one of them were removed because they said something about free trade or the banksters. I think that the reasons were, frankly, far more personal. I don't have any firsthand knowledge of either one. I have never had that conversation with either of those two guys, although I do know Cenk and like him a lot. I've only met Keith once in my life.
Yeah. To see people.
But here's the thing to remember. Rachel calls these people out. It's during the news shows during the day that they don't. And so I don't think that it's like some network policy. I think it's this Democratic wimp thing about, you know, we're trying to be nice. We're trying to be nice to everybody. I don't buy the conspiracy theory. I will give you, there are some areas where the big networks will not go, and they should. And I think, frankly, net neutrality is probably one of the bigger ones, because of who owns them or because they've just decided it's not an issue or whatever. But I think in the stuff that I'm talking about here, you know, why Detroit went down, why the Republicans are sabotaging, you will hear that at 8 o'clock at night or 9 o'clock or whenever Rachel's show comes on. But you don't hear it in the news. And that's where I think it should be, because I think it is news. And there's been this weird differentiation made between news and opinion, where if you call out the Republicans, then you're considered an opinionator. And so Rachel does a show like I do a show, which is considered an opinion show. And then, you know, during the day, you've got other people who are news reporters and they're doing news. But I don't think it's an opinion that the Republicans are sabotaging Obamacare. I think it's a fact. I think it's news. So, Nick, thanks for the call, but, you know, respectfully. Jim, I'm not asking rhetorical questions. I am actually making demands. I am trying to cause viewers and listeners, consumers of mass media, to start demanding from their mass media the truth. So anyway, Michael in Denver, Colorado. Hey, Michael, thanks for listening to AM760. What's up?
Yes, hi, good afternoon, Tom. Listen, first of all, let me quickly say thank you for coming out here. I've just gotten past the first chapter of 2016.
Oh, great.
And I have to tell you that since college, and I'm 63, I haven't read a book and stopped and thought for hours about what I had just read, trying to connect everything together. So after chapter one, it's going to take me a while, but it's an amazing chapter one.
Well, thank you. I think this is one of the most readable, most easily read books that I've ever written, but it's also crammed full of stuff. And a lot of work went into this book, and thank you for those kind words. And wasn't the tattered cover a hoot? We had just a great time there.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
it's my favorite bookstore on the planet, I'd like to say.
Yeah,
to be very honest.
Yeah,
so
yeah. You have a gem there in Denver. So what's up, Michael?
Yeah, well, I just wanted to say briefly here. I heard your opening, rant or your opening statement and everything, and you shouldn't say, I got to dial it back a little bit. You are a very, very aggressive fighter and a very intelligent.
Well, no, wait a second, Michael. Where I said dial it back is I had used words that 10 years ago we used to call swear words. I mean, now you can say them on the air. And I was just, I've always tried to have as a policy for my show that if somebody is driving with their 10-year-old or their 8-year-old in the back seat, that they don't have any worries about listening to my show. And I started calling Republicans names and using words that used to be called swear words, and it occurred to me that I really don't need to do that. I think I can frankly make my point even stronger without doing that. So that was my apology. I don't think I was dialing back my message.
No. I absolutely understood what you were saying, and I'm not saying that, but when you said sedition, I got to tell you that back in the day where they started having those town hall meetings and guys started showing up with guns and all that and shouting people down, I called the guy a seditionist. Mm-hmm. I was amazed because the look on his face was like question mark. Either what do you mean or I don't even know what the word means.
Right.
And a lot of people had that look on their face. Seditionist. You know, what is this? Can we look that up on Google or something? And I have to tell you that we have forgotten those words going back to the, the founding of this nation and what's in our Constitution. And we are treading a very thin line. I actually believe we don't have a democratic republic, a republic based on democratic values, hardly anymore. We're living in a corporatist state. It is fascism. You could ask Benito Mussolini if he was around. He'd be very happy here.
Yeah. I don't entirely disagree with you. And I'd say that we have a constitutional monarchy. The Supreme Court has invented a law out of thin air that multiple presidents have railed against and legislatures have tried to stop, and bipartisan. I mean, John McCain is one of the most conservative guys in the Senate, and Russ Feingold was one of the most liberal senators, and together they came up with a law to get money out of politics. Supreme Court knocked it down with Citizens United. So it's not that our politicians are evil or venal or whatever, but the Supreme Court is creating law in ways that were not contemplated by the founders and that are not included in the Constitution. And I think it is a crime against democracy. And I would say I don't disagree with you. We are not a constitutionally limited, representative democratic republic any longer. We have become a constitutional monarchy in some regards, and we've become an oligarchy in some regards, a corporate oligarchy, which you could call a fascist state.
So. Well, thank you, Tom.
Yeah.
Thank you, Michael. And keep sending the message out.
There you go. You too. Thanks a lot for the call, and thanks for reading the book. Edmund in Hot Springs National Park. Hey, Edmund, what's up?
Good afternoon. I was listening to your comments regarding Detroit bankruptcy and why no one has addressing the true reasons for that bankruptcy. And I know that you know the answer very well. Our media that is basically with these people with the high salaries like Wolf Blitzer and Anderson Cooper, Pierce Morgan, they're not going to tell the real truth. They will lose their jobs. They make tens and millions of dollars salaries. They're not going to jeopardize that. And worst of all is when you have a country that – let me ask you this. How many percent of Americans – you think they're watching your programs and programs that requires intellect and a good judgment? Not very many people. They are watching these trivial programs.
Yeah, they're watching Dancing with the Stars. No, I get your point, Edmund. And to clarify, to the extent that I don't want to pick on Wolf or anybody else by name, Anderson Cooper, I think they're decent men. But the way that television works these days, and thank God we never set this show up to do it this way, is it works on access. If you can't get the Republicans to come on your show and talk with you because you tell the truth about them, you lose your show. And your network loses its show, and your network loses its revenue. And that's why I think we need to go back to, pre-Reagan, pre-fairness doctrines.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
I mean, it used to be back in the days of Chet and David and Walter that Republicans would get on the hot seat because they knew it was the hot seat because the networks had to do a hot seat. And welcome back, Archie, in Yucca Valley, California, watching Free Speech TV on Dish Network. Hey, Archie, what's up?
Hi, Tom. I called last week, and I don't like to call 2 weeks in a row, maybe a couple times every couple of months, but you fire me up so much, and I really appreciate it. I want to give you Black's Law definition of sedition, if I could.
Sure.
An insurrectionary movement tending towards treason but wanting an overt act. Attempts made by meetings or speeches or by publication to disturb the tranquility of the state.
I've got to get that and print it out. Archie, you called last week and shared the same definition with me, right?
No, that was a dictionary.
It was somebody else?
Dictionary. This is Black's Law.
Black's Law, okay.
1968, fourth edition.
Shano's tracking it down. I want to print it out and hang it in front of my camera here so I can read it on the air periodically because I've been trying to avoid words like sedition and treason for a lot of years, but I think that we're there. I really think we're there, especially with the way that this Congress is behaving.
Tom, can I carry on just a bit?
Yes, sir.
I got more. The distinction between sedition and treason consists of this, that though the ultimate object of sedition is a violation of the public peace, or at least such a course of measures as evidently engenders it, yet it does not aim at direct or open violence against the laws or the subversion of the Constitution. Tom, my question is this against the law?
No.
And if it isn't, then all we can do is what you've done since I discovered you on Free Speech TV. At one time, I only had Democracy Now! And C-SPAN to try to distill something out of this mess. But we know, going back to Smedley Butler, you taught me about him, and Nixon, and Reagan, and the caucus room, and this meeting with Meese, that sick man Meese, and are these public citizens? But they have been, remember, the caucus room, their goal, we can hold up everything.
Right.
This is terrible.
Pete Sessions said we're going to behave like the Taliban. We've learned a lesson from the Taliban about how to disrupt somebody's political processes.
It makes me sick, and I'm going to leave you with a quote for your whiteboard.
Okay.
Why does Washington do anything? Oh, shoot, I'm butchering this. Why does Washington fail to do anything smart? We elect idiots.
I don't think we elect idiots. I think we elect people who are beholden to big money. And big money requires them to behave in ways that often makes them appear to be idiots. Although there are, you know, the Joe Bartons out there. I mean, there are people who, you know, in my opinion, probably have IQs that are closer to room temperature than the norm. But I think that there's a lot more bought and paid going on out there than there is stupid. And that's actually even more depressing. I wish I could just attribute it to stupid. But Archie, I appreciate your comments. I think you've nailed it. I think you've said it very well, and I appreciate your kind comment about the program. There's something else I was going to add, but it'll come to me when I'm not thinking of it. Thank you, Archie, for the call. We'll be right back. The place where smart people get their news. The Tom Hartman Program. Welcome back. Thanks for joining us. Okay, Barack Obama wins the election in November of 2008. He's sworn into office on January 20th of 2009. That night, while he is out dancing with his wife, and I was out dancing with Ellen Ratner at the ball over here at Union Station. That night, a group of Republican politicians, including Jim DeMint and John Kyle and Pete Sessions and who's that guy who ran for vice president, Paul Ryan, met in the caucus room restaurant along with Frank Luntz and Newt Gingrich. And basically, Pete Sessions later used the Taliban metaphor. We've learned from the Taliban how to disrupt somebody politically, and basically planned to destroy the presidency of the United of Barack Obama. Jim DeMint, who was in that meeting, later said, "We're going to break him." Remember that? Everybody was all upset because of the slave breakers. You know, they thought it was a purely racial statement. May have not been. But the point is, saying for a sitting United States senator who is now the head of the biggest think tank in the country, to say that he's going to break a president, that sounds to me like sedition or something damn close to it. So anyhow, they had that meeting. That was on the 20th of January. And it didn't take long for the memo to get around to the right-wing media, because 2 days later, this is what Rush Limbaugh had to say on his radio program.
So I shamelessly say no. I want him to fail. If his agenda is a far-left collectivism, some people say socialism, as a conservative, heartfelt, deeply, why would I want socialism to succeed?
Right. I want the president to fail, he says. It's amazing. It's absolutely amazing. Rich in, I got a board full of calls here in just a few minutes. Rich in Ringwood, New Jersey. Hey, Rich.
Hey, how are you?
Good. What's on your mind?
Look, The individual mandate goes back at least 20 years, championed by, let's say, Orrin Hatch and the likes like that.
Sure. For health care. I mean, the actual original mandate goes back to the Second Congress of 1792. The Second Militia Act of 1792 required, quote, every citizen shall within 6 months provide himself with a good musket or flintlock, a sufficient bayonet and belt, two spare flints, and a knapsack. In other words, you are mandated to buy a gun in 1792. The individual mandate has a long history in America.
Absolutely. I just don't know why this is what the Republicans wanted. My second point is, if Citizens United says that corporations are people, then how come they're not providing for health care? They want all the rights of being an individual.
Yeah. Well, you and I both know this. The whole citizens are people thing is a tautology, at best, an offensive slur upon democracy at worst. Rich, thank you. Excellent point. Thank you for the call. Corky in Hilton, New Jersey. Hey, Corky, what's up?
Hello, Tom. Yeah, all these problems that you're discussing,
mm-hmm.
they all originate from the egg of outsourcing. You got health care. Corporations used to provide health care. 85% of the population was covered by corporate health care.
You mean through employers?
When you lose those corporations to outsourcing, you ruin your
No, I, Corky, I totally agree with you. I started my rant by saying, you know, the first hour I watched today on TV was about Detroit, and I didn't hear once anybody point out that our insane trade policy, which led, as you point out correctly, to outsourcing, that our insane trade policy is largely responsible for the reason why Detroit is bankrupt right now, you know, among other things. But it's a good piece of it. Excellent point, Corky. Thank you. Mary Jo in Minneapolis. Hey, Mary Jo.
Hi, Tom. Yes, as the last caller said, not the last caller, but a couple of calls ahead, he was so impressed with the first chapter of your book, but I was so impressed with the first half of your book. Being a teacher, I recognize excellent teaching, and my first impulse was to say, we really have to get Tom's word out to as many people as possible. So I'm really happy that you're doing the tour that you're doing, but I wanted to help you out, so I went ahead and went on Amazon and ordered 20 copies, and I'm going to give it to... now, that's the next question.
Holy
Who do
cow.
I give it to? Do I give it to conservatives? Do I give it to fellow lefties? Or what do you suggest?
Well,
do I give it to library?
I tried to write the book in a way that my dad's kind of conservative, you know, the old Eisenhower conservatives, could read it and not be horribly offended, because I don't call the conservatives evil. I respect the conservative worldview. And I think a good part of the message, as you know from having read half the book, is that it was, you know, conservatives worried about America becoming too liberal too fast, and then liberals really having a heyday in the 60s and 70s doing that freaked out the conservatives, that opened the gap that allowed the predators to step in the 80s and 90s, and they're the ones who took us down. And we've got to stop the predators. It's not that we have to stop the conservatives. That's a legitimate political perspective. Although a lot of these people who call themselves conservatives now are the predators. But I tried to write the book in such a way that both sides could read it. So, and Mary Jo, thank you for, you know, I'm very flattered and gratified that you would think that the crash of 2016 is a great Christmas gift or holiday gift. It would be interesting, you know, try giving it to both and call us back and let us know what kind of response you get.
Well, yes, and I'm hoping more listeners will do the same.
Thank you. Thank you. That's very sweet of you. And no, we didn't put Mary Jo up to that call. Mary Jo, bless you. Thank you so much. We'll be back. It is it's 4 o'clock here in the East Coast. It's the top of the hour. It's coming up on the top of the hour. And I think we've got a guest. No, we don't. Oh, I'm going to talk about youth and dignity. What does dignity mean to you? Last week we talked about death with dignity. You know, like, mostly old people. You know, a lot of young people, unfortunately, die. What about youth with dignity?
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey, friends. Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. EdisonFactor.com. EdisonFactor is a supplement for the brain. More information at EdisonFactor.com. SolarWorld.com. SolarWorld has a 35-year history in the manufacturing of solar in America. More information at SolarWorld.com. Carbonite.com. Automatic online backup and file recovery. More information at Carbonite.com. AngiesList.com. Detailed reviews on roofers, plumbers, house cleaners, dentists, and more. More information at AngiesList.com. Stamps.com. Postage online from your computer. More information at Stamps.com. And our website, TomHartmann.com. You support our programs, and please help by supporting the people who help make this program possible. There are links to all of our underwriters at TomHartmann.com. Thank you.
You're listening to the Tom Hartmann Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartmann here with you, and pleased to be with you. And, boy, there's a lot of stuff that I'd like to share with you. I want to get into this issue of human dignity. And is it in our founding documents? And the dignity of youth. We talked about death with dignity. What about being a young person with dignity? None of my three kids... My kids are in their 30s. By the time I was in my 30s, Louise and I probably had bought our third house. And that's not like saying, hey, we were rich. Because the first house we bought was literally the downstairs was the living room and the bathroom. And the upstairs was the bedroom and the kitchen. And we had a waterbed upstairs and it leaked and it was a mess. And it was this little teeny tiny thing, but, you know, it was like the first house we bought. And we bought it for like, I don't even remember now. I mean, this was in the late 70s, early 80s, like $15,000 or something. I mean, you know, it was, if that. And we didn't, and, you know, I put down a couple of months worth of paychecks on it and we made payments on it. And then, you know, we moved from that house to another bigger house and that house to a bigger house. And we ended up buying the house that we made the most, I guess, on was the housing boom was going on. We bought a house when we moved to Vermont back in the mid-90s. And we sold that house ultimately for more than twice what we paid for it. And I, you know, looking back, I kind of feel guilty about that because, I mean, I was just selling it at the market, but it was just before the market collapsed. But the fact of the matter is that most of the retirement money that Louise and I have is either tied up in or is the result of our having been able to buy a house when we were 25 years old. And we've got a whole generation. And one of my kids right now is in the process of buying a house, the first one for any one of these three. And this is a... I don't want to identify which kid and all that kind of thing, but this is somebody in their 30s who is not going to have the kind of equity that I had in my 50s until this child is in his or her 60s or 70s, and that's assuming that there's no more housing crash, and that's assuming a lot of things. And I find this whole thing, we talked about death with dignity. What about life with dignity? What about young people being able to start their lives in America without being in debt? Now, I know Ronald Reagan, when he was governor of California, you know, was agreeing aggressively with Russell Kirk and the other conservatives who were saying, you know, these young people should not get free college. They should be indebted. They should have to pay for their education so they value it. And by the way, they're hassling poor old Ronnie, you know, for, you know, as Reagan, he famously called them brats and said, you know, why should I pay for the tuition of these brats who are just protesting my policies? You know, I get all that. But human dignity Shane did a really neat job of pulling together some of this stuff. The Pope touched on this theme. He said, a society that cannot offer a person the possibility of work is a society that has stripped this person of dignity. And by work, I mean, the Pope is pretty clear that he's talking about work the way Teddy Roosevelt talked about work. We played that clip on the air yesterday. You know, a living wage, you know, enough to live decently, enough to provide for old age, enough to care for your children, enough to pay for your health care, enough to take a vacation. That was Teddy, not Franklin, Teddy Roosevelt's definition of a living wage. The Pope said, power, money, culture do not give us dignity. Work, honest work, gives us dignity. Today, many social, political, and economic systems have chosen to exploit the human person by not paying a just wage, by not offering work, by focusing solely on the balance sheets, on the company's balance sheets, only looking at how much I can profit. This goes against God. End of quote from Pope Benedict, or Pope Francis, excuse me. This goes against God. Does it go against the Constitution? Well, here's where it gets interesting. The Supreme Court arguably has said yes. Human dignity is something that's in our Constitution. It's in the Eighth Amendment, to begin with. The Eighth Amendment says that you cannot impose cruel and unusual punishment on people. The court has, in Fourth Amendment cases, characterized police behavior as offensive to human dignity. In Lawrence v. Texas, for example, Lawrence v. Texas was the Supreme Court ruling that struck down the anti-sodomy laws in Texas, that struck down the laws that made it a crime to be gay in Texas. And they set in this majority opinion, they said the accused statute infringed upon a liberty interest that involved the most intimate and personal choices a person may make in a lifetime, choices central to personal dignity. Justice Stevens wrote, part of the constitutional liberty to choose is the equal dignity to which each of us is entitled. How is this not all tied together? And yet we're saying to this lost generation, we've got a lost generation, kids in their 20s and 30s, young people in their 20s and 30s, and a losing generation, those in their 40s, 50s, and 60s, who are discovering that, you know, they've got basically two choices, either work for what somebody fresh out of college is willing to work for, which is damn near nothing, or, you know, be a greeter at Walmart. I mean, you know, or just never get a job because, oh, hey, you know, you're in your 50s, you're overqualified, or you're, you know, too old or whatever. You know, the health insurance is going to cost too much. I mean, we need to go back to the concept in this country. Twin concepts of a free college education, which we functionally had. I mean, Thomas Jefferson and Abe Lincoln, you've heard my rants on this, were big advocates of this and actually created free colleges. And college used to be, just right up until the Reagan presidency, was inexpensive enough. When Reagan came into office, 80% of the cost of tuition was paid for by state, federal, and local governments and the schools themselves. Now it's reversed. Now that 80% is paid for by the individual student. Only 20% is paid for by the state. And that's, and people say, oh, you've got inflation in tuition, and it's because the government is giving out Pell Grants and things. This is what conservatives say. That's nonsense. That's a lie. It's been an actual change in policy that is at the core of Reaganomics. So number one, we need to declare a jubilee on the trillions of dollars in student debt and simply say, you know, that student debt never should have happened. That's our intellectual infrastructure. We should have paid for that collectively. We're going to take that $1 trillion and wipe it off the books. If George Bush can run up a $1 trillion debt with one war in 1 year and nobody says boo about it, then we can certainly wipe $1 trillion off the books for all that student debt. And yeah, some of those students might be from wealthy families. I don't care. So number one. And number two, we need to go back to the idea that Franklin Roosevelt laid out, that the best welfare program is a job. The government needs to become the employer of last resort.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
If capitalism is failing, if Mitt Romney's moving all the jobs off to China or wherever, there's plenty that can be done here that the federal government can hire. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And Charles. Hang on just a second, Charles. Got to get to the button. Charles in Hamilton, Texas, watching Free Speech TV on Dish Network. Hey, Charles, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I was going to say I share your frustration with the network, you know, that you were talking about earlier.
Mm-hmm.
And but there are a few of them on there that do that have spoken out just as you have, you know, and there used to be one on there who was formerly a financial commentator with CNBC.
Oh, yeah. What's his name? Dylan Radigan you're talking about.
Yes, that's right.
Dylan had me on his show once. He's a wild man.
Yeah. I think that's where I first found out about you, in fact.
Huh. Interesting.
And now I watch the big picture every night. Okay. And I don't always get to see your show during the day, but I try to as much as possible.
Yeah.
I was wondering, you know, the MSNBC, they're owned by GE, you know.
Well, mostly they're owned now by Comcast. Comcast bought a majority share.
Oh, did they?
Yeah.
Okay.
But well, GE still owns a big piece of it.
Global warming, you know.
Yeah.
And I watched your show last night, and I was just curious what you think about this Dr. Henson, formerly of NASA, you know, mm-hmm. talking about
mm-hmm.
how he came out recently with a letter about how we should move to nuclear power.
Yeah.
What do you think about that?
I strongly disagree with James Hansen on nuclear power. And I think that he has badly damaged his own credibility in the global warming community, because nuclear power, as Fukushima is demonstrating to us, is not ready for prime time. It's not a technology that we can rely on. And B, enormous amounts of fossil fuel, and this is where I just have to assume that James Hansen didn't do his research, if his characterizations of supporting nuclear power are as I have read them. I have not read his exact words, so I don't want to be indicting the man based on hearsay, and I guess that's what I'm doing, so maybe I should back off from that. Let's put it in the abstract. In a more abstract sense, what we have is that the amount of fossil fuel that it takes to mine uranium, to transport uranium, to refine uranium, to transport the refined uranium, to build the nuclear power plants, all the cement, all the steel and everything, that amount of fossil fuel, that fuel debt is not paid back until something like the 10th or 12th year that the nuclear power plant has been running. So they're not carbon free at all.
Right.
So
one of the things he was talking about was how Germany has moved to solar power and putting up solar panels on houses and everything.
Yeah.
There.
Yeah.
He said that if we were trying to move to that there, it would take. He was saying we would have to move to nuclear power in the interim because it would take so long and be so expensive to do that here.
You know, if we can win World War II and build a nuclear bomb in 3 years, we can do damn near anything if we set our minds to it. I'm not that pessimistic, Charles. I think that we could do it. I think we could pull it off. Thanks a lot for your call. By the way, which show is Hanson on? You're gone. Oh. Okay. So the first thing that I want to share with you is this idea of human dignity. The Pope coming out saying that when companies, and these are my words, not his, like Bain Capital break down companies like Sensata and ship their jobs overseas and throw Americans out of work who've been working for 20, 30, 40 years in good paying jobs, as happened during the presidential campaign, ironically, that when companies like Bain Capital do that simply to make a buck. Now, let me quote the Pope. Today, many social, political, and economic systems have chosen to exploit the human person in the workplace by not paying a just wage, not offering work, focusing solely on the balance sheets, the company's balance sheets, only looking at how much it can profit. This goes against God. Wow. Okay, so we talked about that. A couple of other things I wanted to share with you real quickly. You know the old studies that probably anybody who's ever taken an introduction to psych course learned from the 40s where they crammed rats into smaller and smaller cages and discovered that at a certain point the rats actually started eating each other, they got super aggressive, and then ultimately they would even become cannibalistic or at least eat their young. There's a second step to those experiments, which everybody is broadly familiar with. And again, probably you don't even have to take intro to psych to get it. It's part of our culture. And that's the story of rats that, and not just rats. This is done with, it's been done with chimps and other animals too, but the rats stories are the most famous ones. And the most well replicated. Where they put a rat in a cage and they give it a little bar and it can self-administer food or it can self-administer morphine or heroin or cocaine. Your choice. And the rats will just keep self-administering the heroin or the cocaine until they die. They just, you know, stop being interested in eating and just start getting interested in being high. And the takeaway message to all that is, gee, these are terrible, dangerous drugs, and therefore we need to have laws against drugs. Because look at this. You put rats in a cage and you give them all the heroin they want, and pretty soon they're not even eating. They're not reproducing. They're not eating. They're certainly not working. They're not good members of society. They're junkies. Well, as the late, great Paul Harvey would say, that's just half the story. And I find this fascinating. The other two parts of this are fascinating. First of all, this is over at Democratic Underground right now. Jesus Malverde has posted it. The headline is, it's not the morphine, it's the size of the cage. The other part that's kind of funny about this is, you know, DU now has ads. Maybe they always did. I just have recently noticed them. And the ad up at the top of my particular one, and you know, so the ads typically reflect the things that you're buying, you know, that you've bought. I think I've told you the story. I keep getting ads for T-shirts and for customized mugs and things because we've, you know, got that kind of stuff. We've bought that kind of stuff for our website, and so I've gone shopping for things like that. And they know what you're shopping for, right? And I keep saying, you know, thank God I'm not shopping for porn on the web. But in any case, the ad up at the top is for Decon. Solving rodent problems for over 50 years. Learn how now. But I think it's because the content of the story, it's about rats. But here's the story. They redid the rat study. Only in this case, instead of basically tying the rat to the little tab and letting him have the food or the morphine or stick him in a little tiny cage, they built this thing they called the rat park. Alexander built rat park, an 8.8 square meter, that's 95 square foot housing colony, 200 times the square footage of a standard laboratory cage. There were 16 to 20 rats of both sexes in residence, an abundance of food, balls, wheels for play, and enough space for mating and raising litters. Rats who had been forced to consume morphine hydrochloride for 57 consecutive days were brought to rat park. So these are rats who are already addicted. And given a choice between plain tap water and water laced with morphine. But now they're no longer trapped in this miserable little cage with a miserable little life. Now they're in the rat park. For the most part, Alexander wrote, they chose the plain water. Junkie rats! He said, nothing we tried produced anything that looked like addiction in rats that were housed in a reasonably normal environment. Control groups of rats isolated in small cages consumed much more morphine in this and subsequent experiments. In other words, our problem of addiction is not a problem of how horrible and addictive the drugs are, or even how, in some case, I mean, maybe there's an argument for this, maybe not. I honestly don't know. But let's say not even necessarily the fact that some of us are predisposed to love addictive drugs. It's a problem of our society. It's a problem of our culture. We're living in the friggin' rat cages. You wonder, you know, now the thing that would kind of contradict that is the, you know, the occasional wealthy person or movie star who's an addict, you know, famously. But on the other hand, you know, I'm not a movie star or a wealthy person, but I've known a few of them, and that's its own kind of rat cage.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
So the takeaway from this is we should do what Portugal has done. A, decriminalize all drugs, and then B, build a strong social safety net so everybody lives in a rat park. Here's where it gets really interesting. U.S. News and World Report, in their blogs, the Washington Whisper blog, they're looking at the Monday numbers for who's trending toward president of the United States. Because of term limits, which we discussed at some length yesterday, Barack Obama is not going to be running. And this is taking a lot of people, causing a lot of people to go, whoa. Secretary of State John Kerry, House Speaker John Boehner, Hillary Clinton. Hillary Clinton is ranked at number 5. Vice President Joe Biden is at number 10. Chris Christie is number 11. But who is number 4? Bernie Sanders. He's trending at a 71.1% rate. Ted Cruz is trending at a 56% rate. Elizabeth Warren is trending at a 53% rate. Bernie is the only one. No, I shouldn't say that. He's not the only one. Marco Rubio is also. Oh, wait a minute. No, those are the sideways arrows. Okay. He's up nationally. He's up on the Beltway. He's up on Facebook, and he's way up on Twitter. Senator Bernie Sanders for president. Who would have thought? I mean, you know, they did that. They interviewed me for 7 days, which is the weekly newspaper in Vermont, a few weeks ago, maybe a month ago, and said, you know, do you think Bernie will run or should run? And I said, I don't think he will run. I don't think he wants to be a cameo candidate. And I would love it if he did run because, you know, every week somebody calls and says he ought to run. But I just don't know how the mechanics of that work. Because he's not a member of a party. And now Bernie's saying, you know, maybe I will. And the people are saying, please. Wow. Okay. Tom in Seattle. Hey, Tom. Thanks for listening to KBCS. What's up?
Hi, Tom. Hey, thanks for taking my call. I like what you just said about Bernie Sanders, by the way.
Yeah.
And so on the subject of public banking, do you think that public banking is a step in the right direction for the problems of, you know, economic inequality? And then
yes.
To follow up to that, what do you think the obstacles are to public banking and getting it institutionalized?
The obstacles to public banking are that every state in the union, with the exception of North Dakota, has made it illegal for the state to run its own bank. And part of this is an echo back to, Andrew Jackson? I think ran against the Second Bank of the United States. I mean, there's this huge food fight, you know, in the Washington administration with the First Bank of the U.S. And Alexander Hamilton wanted it and Jefferson didn't. And we ended up getting it and then it failed. And then they had the Second Bank of the U.S. And I'm pretty sure that Andrew Jackson's principal campaign platform was that he was going to put it out of business. And he did. And so the only state that actually has legislation that allows that state to create its own state bank is North Dakota. And they have had that bank since the 19-aughts or the 19-teens. That came out of the Progressive era. And it was set up by North Dakotans for North Dakotans so that the profits in the banking could be used to loan money to farmers. And it has worked very, very well in that state. The lead cheerleader for this, and I don't mean that word in the sexist term, probably should come up with a better word, is Ellen Brown, because Ellen's a woman. But the lead advocate for this is Ellen Brown, who wrote Web of Debt, or her website is webofdebt.com, and she's been on this program a number of times. And Ellen has pointed out in numerous articles that if every state had their own bank and they just simply ran that bank for the benefit of the state and took all the profits the banks make and put that profit into the state's coffers, taxes would go down, public benefits would go up, and the banksters would by and large go out of business, and good riddance to them. So, answer your question?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, you know, I guess the bottom line is right now it's illegal, but so to push this a little bit further, I mean, is it
there are,
the states?
There are movements. There is a, I believe it's a ballot initiative in California. There is a, I know in Washington State and Oregon, there are legislative attempts. There are a number of states that are trying to provoke a public bank in their states, a statewide bank. And I am supportive of all of them, although, you know, some of them might be done in some eccentric little way that I wouldn't think was perfect. I don't know at that level of detail. But this is something that should be done nationwide. And the main thing that's preventing it is the fact that the banking industry in the United States right now is one of the most profitable industries on earth, and it is feeding more money to more politicians probably than any other industry, possible exception of fossil fuels. And so the politicians are going to make it very, very hard for states to have public banks. But the people can outdo the money from the banksters if they're pushed. Tom, thanks for the call. Sam in Point Pleasant, West Virginia. Hey, Sam, you wanted to comment on why Detroit went down?
Well, I wanted to make this known. Well, we was talking about, you know, how Ford, they didn't have to get a loan. But GM did and Chrysler did. Mm-hmm. And now Chrysler, I just heard yesterday, they're up the highest since the 70s.
Right. Chrysler's also no longer an American company.
Another point I was wanting to make is about Toyota. Mm-hmm. Because Charleston is about 55 miles from Point Pleasant. And about halfway from here to Charleston is a Toyota plant that Senator Jay Rockefeller had put in there back there in like the late 80s, and they built a bridge across the river just so it could go to Route 35 with the loads of cars and trucks. And they, in back there in 09 and 010, 2 years in a row, was the number one producing plant in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And so they got expanded. They got transmission plant now, building motors along with
Yeah, I got you. You got to don't listen to your TV, Sam. What's your point?
Well, my point is Detroit. I don't know what happened to them.
So what you're saying is that Detroit went down because low-wage states like West Virginia or South Carolina or North Carolina were building that companies were coming in and building factories in these low-wage states. And they didn't have to pay as much as they were paying to workers in Detroit. And there's some truth to that. There's a lot of truth to that, actually. And this gets back to my rant about our trade policy in part, because Toyota is not an American company. All the profits that Toyota makes go, by and large, to Japan. And so why are we having Japanese companies build factories on our property, and in fact we're giving them tax incentives and things to do it? Why are we doing that? And you'd say, oh, let's get jobs, but why not have an American company do that? I mean, if there's a market for a car, then an American company should be able to fill that market. And if Toyota wants to build a car, let them build it in Japan and let them pay an import tariff when they bring it into the United States like they used to, like it used to be. We used to have, you know, we had over 100 auto manufacturers in the United States back in the 19-aughts, the 19-teens, and then it got filtered down to about 15 of them. And then by the end of World War II, I think we were at 5 or 6. And now we've got the so-called Big Three, although Chrysler's no longer an American company. So basically you've got Ford and GM. And all these other companies that are making cars here, they're doing it because we're now the low-wage place. I mean, you know, auto workers in Japan make 2 or 3 times what they make in South Carolina or North Carolina. Automakers in Germany make 3-4 times what they make in the United States. And that's just wrong. You know, if they want to make those cars, they should make them in their countries. Sam, thanks for the call. Pardon my rant here, but it's Fred in Como, Colorado. Hey, Fred, what's up? Thanks for listening to AM760.
Hey, Tom. Sorry, I just had to put the speaker off. I've been on hold for over an hour, but I was at that book signing in Tattered Book 2. It was great to meet you. You looked really tired. I hope you got some rest since then.
Thank you. I have.
Oh, I was thinking of something when I called your whatever. Oh, yeah. In the beginning of the show, you were asking some questions, and it just turns out I got myself a DVD player, I guess a month and a half, 2 months ago, I don't know, and I got some DVDs from the library, and one of them was Inside Job, and I get your books. I'm sorry for scrambling my thoughts around, but I'm a brain-damaged Vietnam vet, and
Well, it says here what you told Danielle is that all we deserve is what we're getting because the Democrats aren't that much better than the Republicans.
Well, right, and I don't get me wrong when I say that because I phoned so much for the Obama campaign against Romney, and I'm really glad that Romney didn't get in.
Yeah.
Christmas card, and I felt like sending it back so many times saying, what the heck's going on here? You know, with his cabinet choices and even Larry Summers most recently.
No, there's no, Paul, there's no perfect politician, but there are perfect voters. We need to get more involved. Paul, thank you for the call.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
It's a place where despair is not an option. No, seriously, like, you know, with those rats. I mean, convert those emotions into action. Welcome back. Johnny in Eureka, California, watching Free Speech TV. Hey, Johnny, what's up?
Hi, Tom. What I want to know is, I watch all the people that are protesting different things, and I want to be right out there with them, but I don't understand why they're getting arrested. Isn't it our constitutional right to assemble and to protest things like that? And
yeah, that's what the First Amendment says. And
why are they getting arrested?
you got me. I mean, if we were anywhere near as vigorous about protecting the First Amendment as we are, as the NRA is about protecting the Second Amendment, you would not see any of these protests being busted up because the Constitution. I mean, I'll read you the language of the First Amendment. It's pretty straightforward. Congress shall make no right respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof or abridging the freedom of speech or of the press or the right of the people peaceably to assemble and to petition the government for redress of grievances. Now, there have been times when that, you know, assembly has been less than peaceable, you know, the whole black bloc thing and, you know, smashing windows and stuff like that. And I don't disagree with people being arrested if they're destructive. But
destruction of property or something.
Yeah, but, yeah. But when
but
people are peaceful protesters,
a public place that we all taxpayers have paid for.
I know. They've come up with this idea that you got to have a permit, you got to have a parade permit, you know, public gatherings and all this kind of stuff. And I think these are all violations of the First Amendment. I really do.
I do too. I don't understand at all why anybody should be arrested for being in public.
Yeah, yeah, I am with you. But the Supreme Court over the years has upheld these rules that these communities have had and have made, that have said that people you're going to need to drop that mic too for Ellen. That the Supreme Court over the years has upheld these rules, and you know, that say that you've got to get a permit and all that kind of stuff. And I think it's crazy. I think it's just craziness.
Yeah, I do too. Anyway, maybe we could work on that.
Yeah.
I think I'm going to. I think that corporations are, or like they kicked everybody out of Zuccotti Park. Wasn't that a public park? Or was it supposedly owned by the corporation that had the sidewalk and around it?
Zuccotti Park, I think, was owned, I don't know. I shouldn't say, because I just don't know. I do know that the Occupy movements have been kicked out. These anti-vagrancy laws, the laws that are being used now to basically trash homeless people, I think that arguably they're unconstitutional, although the Constitution doesn't say you have the right to publicly assemble for purposes of you got no place else to live. It says you have the right to publicly assemble to petition your government for redress of grievances. And that's the world's best vitamin C, by the way, Ellen. Feel free to take some. It's incredible stuff. Louise and I are totally jonesed on it. Anyway, so that's the Ellen Ratner just joined us. She's going to be with us giving the news in just a minute. So Johnny, do you know of any movements that you're going to join and participate in this?
Sure.
Good. Okay, well, keep us up to date on how it goes, okay? I wish you the very best.
You.
Thanks a lot for the call, and thanks for watching Free Speech TV. We'll be right back. We got to get ready for Ellen here. Stick around. Tom Hartman here with you, and let's check in with Ellen Ratner with the Talk Radio News Service on all the news of the day. The Talk Radio News Service brought to you by Goats for the Old Goat, where you can give the gift of a goat to a returning slave in South Sudan. And this literally is a life-saving gift. GoatsfortheOldGoat.com is the only animal group that gives you a picture of your group and the recipient. And Ellen takes the pictures herself.
And today is Giving Tuesday, so it's a great day to buy a goat.
Today is Giving Tuesday, really?
Yes. So there's
Cyber Monday.
Black Friday. There's Small Business Saturday. There is Cyber Monday and now Giving Tuesday.
Okay. GoatsfortheOldGoat.com. Thank you, Ellen.
You're very welcome. Okay. Well, lots of things going on here.
Mm-hmm.
There was a House hearing, House controlled by Republicans, your friends, and they had a hearing today at the House Judiciary Committee on Obamacare, and they are saying,
what a surprise.
One more hearing. Right? They're saying that Lamar Smith, he's of course from Texas, yeah. He said that the president was trying to make laws at news conferences. What were they trying to do? The Democrats said that this was a farce, a waste of time. Sheila Jackson Lee, also of Texas, says we're throwing laws to the wasteland at this hearing. It has no sense. The Democrats actually did not bring witnesses. They just complained about the hearing, which, I mean, why?
Have the Republicans ever explained why they think it's fine that 45 million Americans don't have health insurance?
No, and nor have, you know, the thing I keep saying, and I say this to all my Republican hosts, because we get on the air with Republicans as well as Democrats and as well as liberals and all that kind of stuff, progressives, and I always say, where's the legislation? How come they haven't written any legislation on all this? Yeah, and they say, well, you're right about that.
Well,
yeah, of course we're right about
actually,
that.
Actually, you know, the answer is the alternative legislation is called Obamacare. Because it used to be called Romney Care. Because
right.
It used to be called Heritage
Foundation.
That's absolutely
true.
Care.
And the Heritage Foundation, actually, that's exactly right. Even one of my Republican hosts admitted, well, it was supported.
Go back and there's an incredible 3-minute clip that you can find on YouTube of Walter Cronkite describing the differences between Nixon's health program and what Ted Kennedy wanted to have. And he lays out all the details of Nixon's program. It's Obamacare.
Well, Nixon
this is like
actually 73. Yes, Nixon believed in universal health care.
Yes.
Shocking. I just want to also tell anybody who's listening, if you're in Washington, D.C., we are having a party tonight for Tom Hartman, not only for his brand new book, The Crash of 2016, but also for him getting his honorary doctorate, Dr. Tom Hartman. So we're combining both tonight. If you're in Washington, we'd love to see you.
Yes, and you're going to get
it's
up.
It's at Politics and Prose.
At Politics and Prose on Connecticut Avenue, right?
That's correct.
50s. Something or other, Connecticut.
Right, audience. Right. I don't have the exact address, yeah. But look up Politics and Prose on Connecticut Avenue.
Yeah,
starts at 7 tonight. We'd love to have
it. I've heard it's a wonderful story.
Okay, so then the president today spoke about Obamacare at the White House, and he said he's going to speak about it every day until Christmas. He was introduced with a woman who had Crohn's disease who said because she was on her parents' health care plan, she was under 26, she was able to get treatment for Crohn's disease. He said that there are ongoing problems with healthcare.gov, but he said that the site has to demonstrate that it's available to working for everybody. He said, we're going to fix that site. We're going to do what we need to do. He said our poor execution in the first couple of months clouded the fact that there are a whole bunch of people who stand to benefit.
Yeah, and I have to add, you know, Crohn's disease is not only very expensive to treat, but a friend of mine died of Crohn's disease. I mean, this is like these giant ulcers that form in the
It's a horrible disease to have and very, very painful.
Yeah.
And he said, whatever comes up, we're going to fix it. Okay. Toy guns. Interestingly, they renewed the law that basically says you cannot bring toy guns through those scanners and TSA scanners and everything. But it was done on a voice vote so that...
So nobody's on the record.
That's exactly right, Dr. Tom.
These Republicans, they know how to cover their butts.
I mean, I just like, what? Now, the other thing that it did not cover is now these 3D printers that can print guns.
Right.
So what happens is that's not a toy gun,
right?
But a 3D printer can print a gun.
Right, right. Interesting. Now, isn't there some sort of political procedure where a Democrat could have demanded a roll call vote?
I think so, but for some reason they didn't. They did it on a voice
vote. Maybe they were afraid that if they did, that it would flip the result.
That's a possibility. Yeah. Whatever. It went on a voice vote, so they just don't have to say that they voted for more bans.
Yeah, there you go.
Pretty astounding.
Actually, maybe they should do more of that. At least they did something.
Well, at least they did do something. Syria. There was a panel in Geneva today, and they have said that there were definitely war crimes created and done by the regime that's currently in power. They refused to list the people who they might take before The Hague, including President Assad. So they're not really listing those people because they said they haven't completed their investigation, but they're definitely saying that there were war crimes committed. I don't think you needed a UN investigation to figure that one out.
Yeah, here's the problem. How long has it been since Bashir of Sudan has been indicted for war crimes?
And he went to
years.
The what? Right, and he actually, even though he'd been indicted, he went to the
OAS meeting,
on the 9th of July 2011. He went to South Sudan, and he just recently went there.
Yeah.
Okay. There is now apparently there have gotten 9 more convoys in. They've gotten into the rebel areas in Syria. So they are now saying that there are convoys that are coming into Syria, going into the rebel areas from the United Nations. That apparently is being allowed to a greater extent.
This is for aid.
Right.
Okay.
But the Security Council has not agreed to some kind of resolution allowing human aid into or humanitarian aid into Syria. They just can't even agree on that.
Wow.
That's pretty astounding. Okay. Last story, budget talks about extending unemployment benefits. Republicans don't want it extended. The CBO said it's going to cost a certain amount of money, but nobody's talking about what it's going to cost not to do this.
I'm baffled by why Republicans don't want people to have health care. I'm even more baffled why they don't want them to have unemployment benefits.
It's good for the economy.
Right. Having the unemployment benefits is, yeah.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. EdisonFactor.com. EdisonFactor is a supplement for the brain. More information at EdisonFactor.com. SolarWorld.com. SolarWorld has a 35-year history in the manufacturing of solar in America. More information at SolarWorld.com. Carbonite.com. Automatic online backup and file recovery. More information at Carbonite.com. AngiesList.com. Detailed reviews on roofers, plumbers, house cleaners, dentists, and more. More information at AngiesList.com. Stamps.com. Postage online from your computer. More information at Stamps.com. And our website, TomHartman.com. You support our programs, and please help by supporting the people who help make this program possible. There are links to all of our underwriters at TomHartman.com. Thank you.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And two things I want to talk about in this hour. The first is the president came out today, and he says, as Ellen pointed out in our newscast a minute ago, he says that every day between now and Christmas, he's going to talk about Obamacare. And maybe the reason why is because they've extended the sign-up date to December 23rd, the day before Christmas, so that you can sign up for Obamacare and have your policy start on January 1st. So I'm curious if you have had an experience with Obamacare, positive or negative. I'm most interested, frankly, in the positive ones. But, you know, have you had an experience with Obamacare? What has it been? You know, is it working for you? A. The other thing I wanted to share with you is the third way. Remember the Democratic Leadership Council? Harold Ford Jr., I saw him on TV today. He used to be the head of the DLC. And the Democratic Leadership Council used to be basically the corporate-owned Democrats. They were the shills for Wall Street and for the big corporations. And they went out of business, basically. The DLC vanished, I believe. And they've been replaced by a group called the Third Way. And the Third Way just published this op-ed a few weeks ago, they published an op-ed in the Wall Street Journal. And they just put up another one, apparently, condemning Elizabeth Warren. Hunter is blogging about this today. Actually, so is Coase. So is Marcos Melitzis over the Daily Coase. And here's, this is from the Wall Street Journal op-ed. They say, if you talk to leading progressives these days, you'll be sure to hear this message. Now, this is supposed to, the Third Way is supposed to be Democrats talking to Democrats, right? This is what they're pretending they are. If you talk to leading progressives these days, you'll be sure to hear this message. The Democratic Party should embrace the economic populism of New York Mayor-elect Bill de Blasio and Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren. Such economic populism, they argue, should be the guiding star for Democrats heading into 2016. Nothing would be more disastrous for Democrats. Okay, this is what they're saying in their op-ed in the Wall Street Journal. They go on to say, the political problems of liberal populism are bad enough. Worse are the actual policies proposed by the left-wing populists. And they go on to rant about how, you know, gee, if we just raised taxes on rich people and closed up some corporate loopholes, we could pay for everything and invest in K-12 education and infrastructure and health research and clean energy and break up some of the big banks. And, oh, my God, you know, and they're presenting this as the liberal fantasy, right? Having forgotten, apparently, that this is how this country worked for 40 years. They go on to say Social Security is exhibit A of this populist political and economic fantasy. Social Security, really? Oh, that's right. They don't want to raise the cap. Who the hell is this group, this Third Way, right? This Third Way that is now preaching, Democrats preaching to Democrats about how to be good Democrats and how to win elections. Who are these people? They go on and on and on. I recommend to you, I'm not going to read the whole thing, I recommend to you Marcos's piece titled Corporate Dems Cutting Social Security as a Path to Electoral Victory. But then it gets really interesting. Hunter, who is one of the more prolific bloggers over at Daily Kos, points out that the Democratic organization Third Way is going after Elizabeth Warren. Right. Surprise, surprise. And he asks the question, he or she, I don't know the gender of Hunter, but why would the Third Way, a very reasonable and centrist organization that just wants both parties to get along and agree to cut Social Security, Medicare, and other social programs, why would they be so worked up about Elizabeth Warren? I mean, you know, the Third Way is about cutting Social Security, isn't it? You know, that whole chain CPI thing and stuff like that. So Hunter then publishes a list of the Board of Trustees of the Third Way, along with their professions. Let me just read this to you. The chairman is John Vogelstein. He is an investment banker. The chairman emeritus is Bernard Schwartz. He is an investment banker. The vice chairman is David Hellett. Heller. He is an investment banker. Georgette Bennett is on the board. Her job is not described. William Bunninger is a CEO. David Coulter is on the board. He is an investment banker. Lewis Coleman is an investment banker. William Daly is an investment banker. John Dyson is an investment banker. Robert Dyson is an investment banker. Andrew Feldstein is an investment banker. Brian Frank is an investment banker. Michael Goldberg is an investment banker. Peter Joseph is an investment banker. Derek Kaufman is an investment banker. Derek Kirkland is an investment banker. Ronald Kane is an investment banker. Peter Lewis is a CEO. Thurgood Marshall Jr. is an investment banker. Herbert Miller is a CEO in real estate. Michael Novogratz is an investment banker. Andrew Parmatier is an investment banker. Kirk Raid is an investment banker. Howard Rossman is an investment banker. Barbara Manfrey Vogelstein is an investment banker. And Joseph Zimlick is an investment banker. In fact, the only members of the Third Way Board of Trustees who are not investment bankers or CEOs are Ted Trimpa, Susan McHugh, Georgette Bennett, and Jonathan Cowan, as far as I can tell from looking at this list. So these are the guys who are telling us that running Elizabeth Warren or Bernie Sanders, I mean, you can't run Bernie Sanders as a Democrat unless he decides that he's going to become one. But running Elizabeth Warren or running somebody like Elizabeth Warren or running Elizabeth Warren for vice president even is bad, stupid politics for the Democratic Party. Elizabeth Warren is not the kind of person who's going to win elections for Democrats. And her policies are bad policies. And if you don't believe it, just read their op-ed in the Wall Street Journal, which all Democrats read, of course, don't they? Actually, all investment bankers read, but, you know, anyway. Yeah. The Third Way. Third Way. Wasn't that, didn't Bill Clinton invent that phrase? That thing? The Third Way? I don't think it had to do with this. I think it was a whole separate thing. Bill Clinton, I think net, he made a lot of mistakes, but he was probably a pretty good president. Certainly better than the alternative. Holy cow! Can you imagine Bob Dole? I mean, we knew what a disaster George Herbert Walker Bush was, but Bob Dole. Was John McCain on meds, right? But, you know, Bob Dole was like, you know, he was a rational version of John McCain. John McCain just kind of goes, bah! And just explodes and goes crazy. Bob Dole was John McCain. In other words, he was the irascible old guy who's out there yelling, get off my lawn. He just doesn't yell it quite as loudly. Anyway. Thank goodness. You know, and think how far to the right the Supreme Court would be. Whew, even worse. you know, had Bill Clinton never been president. So anyhow, the question, first of all, have you had an experience with Obamacare? I'm curious to hear. I have a family member and a friend. One of my very closest friends, he and his wife signed up successfully, got a good deal, and one of my kids signed up successfully, got a good deal. Have you had any experience with that? And I wanted to tell you about the third way.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
So from now on, whenever you hear third way, just think investment banker, because they're really synonymous, largely. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And Deborah watching Free Speech TV in Ocala, Florida. Hey, Deborah, what's up?
I was listening to your talk about Elizabeth Warren.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm 64 years old, not that that matters. But she is the right woman to run.
I agree.
For the, president.
I agree.
She has she has a direct sense of what is going on in our country and what we need to be paying attention to.
Yes. I think Elizabeth Warren could easily be the next FDR.
Yes, she could. And I would get out there, although I'm 64, and I would be the path to help her get there.
There you go. There you go. Well, you know, 64 is not that old, Deborah. I'm 62.
Right.
we can pull this off, right? We got life left in us.
We do.
We're going to make some stuff happen here. Okay, Deborah, thank you very much for the call. I appreciate it. Great to hear from you, and thanks for watching Free Speech TV. George in Sedona, Arizona. Hey, George.
Hey, Tom. Thank you very much for taking my call. I'm 75, so I'm probably too old for Obamacare, but I have a perfect name, I believe, for the 99% of us.
Mm-hmm.
It came from a book written in 1914 in England called The Ragged Trousered Philanthropists by Robert Tressel.
Hmm.
I don't know if you've ever read it.
I've heard of Robert Tressel. I've never heard of this book, though. Tell me about it.
Yeah, oh, it's fantastic. It just has a small group of workers on a three-story house, and they're remodeling it, and they get such low wages, like threepence and sixpence and things like that,
mm-hmm.
that they can't live on it. And, you know, it's almost coming to that with the fast food workers here. And
oh, it's already there. It's already there.
You know,
yeah,
we're all just philanthropists. To the big money, and we are.
I mean, you know, the McDonald's is showing multi-billion-dollar profits, and Walmart is showing multi-billion-dollar profits. One of the Walmart heirs just got her drunk driving arrest expunged from her record. But anyway, they're showing multi-billion-dollar profits because we are paying the living expenses of their employees. We are paying for their health expenses through Medicare. We're paying for their food with food stamps, with SNAP. We're paying to care for their children with daycare and with, you know, programs for AIDS to women with dependent children, women and infants and children. WIC is the program. I guess, you know, we're subsidizing Walmart and we're subsidizing McDonald's.
Right.
That's an interesting book. I'm going to have to check that out. George, thank you very much for that.
Just one other thing.
Sure.
Just one other thing, Tom.
Sure.
Tom?
Yeah, I'm listening.
Oh, I'm eagerly awaiting your crash of 2016. I just hope it comes before the actual crash.
Yeah, me too. Did you get one by making a donation to Free Speech TV?
Yeah.
Okay, well, that should be coming pretty soon because I finished signing all those from the last one today. And I'm sorry it's taken me so long. I intended to do it while I was on my book tour, so... Probably you'll be getting it next week. So
just for the last one.
Yeah.
Wasn't there a tea party in Alice in Wonderland?
Yes, there was. That's perfect. That's perfect. Thank you for reminding me of that, George. The tea party. Yes, there was a tea party in Alice in Wonderland. In fact, that's what much of the story was all about. We'll be right back. Past the hour, Tom Hartman here with you. Welcome back. And John in Anchorage, Alaska. Hey, John, you wanted to talk about tariffs?
I sure did. But first, I wanted to say, you're a hero to everyone here in Alaska. And we missed the program. and I'm sure Shannon Moore would say a hello to you.
Shannon is wonderful.
Talk about that. She really is. She just lets me rant. And I'm going to apologize before I start ranting. Yes, our trade agreement, and that is in our Constitution. These other countries, they are charged at a 33%. I remember when President Obama did the tire thing, and everyone started talking about, oh, he's a protectionist. I don't know why they're protecting China so much. Every country, even Portugal, which you talked about, Germany, there's 33% tariff tax. And I think ours is down to almost nothing, 1%, 2%. That would solve our problems right there. And like I said, that is in our Constitution.
Yeah.
What I really wanted to get into is what's going on in Alaska. As soon as they took your program off the air, it was this big propaganda thing about, oh, we're so hardy up here, we're hardy people, and we're stealing BP's money. They just gave all the tax money back to BP, who's a – remember our Supreme Court? They just did not about whether BP was killing people, but whether they could be prosecuted in the United States for killing people.
Right.
Yeah, they were doing union workers. I mean, what's going up there is criminal, let alone these people. They've been raping children, I guess, in this bowling alley. This should be national news. Yes, our Senator Lisa Murkowski ran on that to get to the bottom of these. Yeah,
John, I'm going to have to, you're getting into some pretty inflammatory stuff, and I'm going to have to stop you because I don't have any personal knowledge of it. I can't corroborate it. But, thanks for the clue. Thanks for the tip. I'm going to have to do some homework and look some of this stuff up. And it's been a while since I've read Shannon Moore's blog, and I'm going to have to get back to that. And if you talk with her, please give her my very best regards. We need to get her back on the air, too. I know that there's some nasty stuff going on up there in Alaska, politically speaking, as it were. They're trying to repeal the tax that Sarah Palin put into place, actually, which is putting the Republicans in a very odd position. John, thanks a lot for the call. I appreciate it. Paul in Woodinville, Washington. Hey, Paul, what's up?
Hey, Tom. I guess I'm going to change gears here because you wanted to go with Obamacare.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll save my other remarks first, or I'll email them to you or something like that.
Okay.
I've had the same experience with Obamacare that about 85% of Americans have had, which is it hasn't affected me personally at all.
Uh-huh.
See?
You're right.
And this is an important thing. I wanted to say that because over the weekend we heard Michigan Congressman Mike Rogers, who happens to be the congressman that of the district where my mother lives in Livingston County, which is just east of Lansing, of Ingham County, he said that in an effort to fix things for a few people, Obamacare has ruined things for everyone, okay?
Right.
Which is obviously not true, since Obamacare hasn't affected me and hasn't affected a lot of people.
Well, and in fact, Medicare spending, this is from a graphic that's over at the, from the New York Times. It's over at the top of DU right now. Medicare spending is 15% below projections. Medicaid spending is 16% below projections. And private premiums for health insurance are 9% below projections. For 3 years in a row now, we have seen the slowest growth in the rate of growth of the cost of health care. In the last 50 years, and it's only been since the Affordable Care Act was made law.
Yeah. Well, and here's the kicker, though, Tom, is that you may have seen on Face the Nation on Sunday, Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker saying that we can't just repeal Obamacare, we have to replace it.
Yeah.
And his plan is, well, we need to replace it with market-driven strategies like health savings accounts. So if you like your insurance policy, all 85% of us, you won't be keeping it under Scott Walker's plan. You're going to be moving to a health savings account, you see?
Right.
Because
put aside $100 a month and hope that your hospital bill doesn't exceed your savings when you get sick.
How ridiculous. So let's ask the listeners, do you know what a health savings account is? Do you know how it works? Is it right for you and your family?
Right.
Let's play the scare you tactic the other way around, you know?
Yeah, you're right, because most people don't realize what a health savings account is, and they used to be limited to $5,000 a year. I don't know how much they are now, but back when I was doing a show for Clear Channel, we qualified for one. And you can set aside a certain amount of money out of your paycheck into a savings account, and it's not taxed. It's sort of like a 401k. It's pre-tax money. And as long as you spend that money on health care at some point in your life, there's no tax on it. If you take it out of the health savings account and decide to spend it on anything, not only do you pay the tax you would have paid otherwise, but you pay huge penalties. So,
right. And let's think about how many of us or how many of a lot of people could actually fund a health savings account. But here's my question. If a health savings account is such a great idea, who do you think would sell you a health savings account mortgage? Like give you the $500,000 up front.
Right.
And then, you see, nobody would.
Right.
Because nobody wants to be in that position of you having a $500,000 like cancer bill, and then you die, and
right.
they never get their money back.
Right, right,
right.
Fascinating way of looking at it, Paul. Thank you for that. I think that the idea, you know, the fact that average Americans don't understand health savings accounts and health and savings and accounts are all words that are like positive associations. You know, Frank Luntz has to have had something to do with you know, focus grouping that, right? I mean, this has got to be a Frank Luntzism. Because, I mean, this is Scott Walker's solution. Set aside $5,000 every year and say in 10 years you got $50,000 set aside and you get cancer and the treatment is $300,000. Gee, you got $50,000 paid for. Isn't that great?
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
And this is, and you know, when you hear the Scott Walker talking, you hear the Koch brothers talking, it's sort of like a ventriloquist. So this is the Koch break. Well, I suppose they got enough billions, it doesn't matter, right? Occupying the media, 3 hours a day, 5 days a week. Tom Hartman here with you. Gary in Santa Ana, California. Hey, Gary, what's on your mind?
I was just calling, Tom, to let you know I was a positive on the Obamacare.
Oh, yeah? What happened?
We have an Obamacare station here in Costa Mesa. I'm in Santa Ana, but it's right on the border, and went over there. They signed us up. They told us they'd give us a call back in 2 weeks, and 2 weeks later they called us up, and they said the packet would be on its way, and we got our packet from HealthNet, and they quote us at $38, but when we got it, it was $36 a month.
Wow. You're getting you're getting health insurance for $36 a month?
Well, just for my wife. I'm on VA. I'm sorry.
Wow. But still, I mean, for any human being, $36
a
month. I mean, they want more than that for my cats.
Yes, yes. And, Tom, I would just want one question. What is your, out of all of your books you've written, what is your most satisfying book that you've written?
I think that I have three that are my favorites. Walking Your Blues Away is a book that I wrote about why Sigmund Freud stopped using hypnosis and how people can basically become their own therapists. It's a book on psychological healing, and I think it's a breakthrough book. It has not gotten a lot of publicity. It has a small cult following, mostly among therapists. And it's a short book. It's like about 100 pages. It's easy to read. It's called Walking Your Blues Away. I think that might be, if I had never written any other book, that might be the kind of thing where at the end of your life you say, okay, I did some good. The second is The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, which is a book about peak oil and the end of the oil era and how our culture is what's dysfunctional, not just our technology. And how we need to change our culture and that sort of thing. And the third book that was probably the most frightening when I published, I remember when this went off to the printer for about 3 months before it came out, I did not sleep. I just could not sleep. I was so frightened of this book coming out. It's called The Prophet's Way, and it's basically an autobiography. And it's the story of Gottfried Müller, mostly, who was my spiritual mentor, and my adventures around the world with him, and it's a very much, you know, a book about my spiritual life. And I was so, that's not the kind of thing you usually talk to other people about. And I was so, in retrospect, I guess, cowardly or afraid that I would be criticized or ridiculed or something. And actually, the response has been fairly positive to it. I do get an occasional, you know, you're a crackpot type of email. But those three books, I think, are the...
Thank you, Tom. And, yeah. and may I say, may the gods bless you all this season.
Thank you, Gary. And the same to you, including the flying spaghetti monster.
Right.
There you go. Okay. Right. Gary, thank Bye-bye. You very much. Taylor in Rockford, Illinois. Hey, Taylor, what's on your mind today?
Hey, how you doing?
Very well, thank you. What's up?
I'm curious, what would you recommend for an individual or individuals that are not knowledgeable about politics?
Mm-hmm. But
how would they learn? How would they get involved? What would you recommend they do?
Show up. There's nothing better than hanging out with like-minded people. Drinking Liberally is a great organization. It's been a long time since I've talked about Drinking Liberally. Jacob, who used to be my board operator and associate producer, was, he liked to go out every week and have a drink, and he was a regular with the Drinking Liberally groups. They're all over the country. You can, just plug them into the DuckDuckGo machine or the Google machine, and you'll find them. There's now a Screening Liberally where people get together and watch movies together. There may be an Eating Liberally. I've heard that there was, people were setting those things up where, let's get together in our favorite restaurants. Those are kind of social groups, but, you meet like-minded people. Then there's groups like Progressive Democrats of America and MoveToAmend.org that have national chapter, that have, local organizations. They all run out of people's homes all over the country. And you can participate with them. And then there's a whole bunch of others, democracyforamerica.com. That would be my starting point. If you were looking for a book, I understand that Howard Zinn's History of America is now out in comic book form, which would be very accessible. I haven't seen it. I may see it tonight at Politics and Prose. The book that I've written about politics that I think would be the best introduction to politics for somebody is called Rebooting the American Dream. And it's really simple. 11 chapters, 11 things that we should do to just take our country back. Am I answering your question, Taylor?
Yeah, actually you are. Actually, I'm writing them down as you're saying them.
Okay. Setting aside, the idea of promoting my own books, which I'm really trying not to do. There are a couple of books that I've written that are not all that great and I wouldn't recommend. Never underestimate the power of hanging out with like-minded people. There's an energy that develops, and that's why I think that the Drinking Liberally groups and the Move to Amend groups and the Progressive Democrats of America where once a month or once a week, folks just get together for an hour or two and hang out and nothing comes out of it. I mean, I don't think that the Drinking Liberally groups ever, ended up marching down the street with a sign, but they encourage each other. They give each other access to resources and things, that kind of thing. So that would be where I'd begin. Taylor, I got to move along, but thank you for the call and thanks for a great question. I appreciate it. Thank you. Brian in Denver, listening on AM 760. Hey, Brian, what's up?
Oh, it takes me a moment. I'm used to going by a pen name. I a long, long time ago in the program, I heard you alluding to a mandatory weapons, and
yes.
You listed some specific things, but
yes.
I did not memorize them.
Okay.
Does it even sound familiar now?
Sure. I'd be glad to share it with you. It's this, if you want to write it down, this is from the Second Congress. So this is the Second Congress, first session. It's Chapter 33. It's the Congress of 1792.
Okay, take a moment to move. I'm sorry.
It's okay.
He grab things. Okay. Now I'm ready. Sorry.
That's quite all right. This is Chapter 33 of the first session of the Second Congress of the United States. So that was in 1792. This was, the United States became a country in 1789. So the first Congress would have been 1790. The second Congress would have been 91, 92, I guess. So, and this bill, which was passed into law on May 8th, 1792, is called the Militia Act, and be it enacted by the Senate and House of Representatives of the United States and Congress assembled, that each and every free, able-bodied, white male citizen of the respective states resident therein, who is or shall be of the age of 18 years and under the age of 45 years, shall severally and respectively be enrolled in the militia by the captain or commanding officer of the company, that every citizen so enrolled and notified shall, within 6 months thereafter, provide himself with a good musket or firelock, a sufficient bayonet and belt, two spare flints, and a knapsack, a pouch with a box therein to contain not less than 24 cartridges suited to the bore of his musket or firelock, each cartridge to contain a proper quantity of powder and ball, and with a good rifle, knapsack, shock pouch, and powder horn, 20 balls suited to the bore of his rifle, and a quarter of a pound of powder, and shall appear so armed, accoutered, and provided when called out to exercise or into service, except when called out on company days to exercise only, he may appear without a knapsack. So this was basically the draft. This was the first militia, you know, and because the founders wanted there to be a militia rather than an army. They did not want there to be a standing army. So everybody between, what was this, 17 and 45, I think it was, or 18 and 45, yeah, 18 and 45, had to be a member of the militia. But in addition to that, they mandated that you had to buy at your own expense the stuff that I just read, you know, that every citizen so enrolled and notified shall, within 6 months thereafter, provide himself with a good musket. So the first time that our federal government mandated that we as individual citizens had to buy something was not Obamacare. It was during the George Washington administration in the first session of the second Congress on May 8th, 1792, and they mandated that you had to buy a gun.
Would the militia itself then be the way to take another look at guns? You want us to give up some power for people who think that way? Give up some of yours, government, maybe we'd be okay with it, and don't draft us.
Yeah, well, that's a possibility. I'm you know, frankly, of a similar mind to the people who passed this Militia Act, that we should have local militias rather than a standing army, because basically the local militia only shows up once a month, you know, to hang out, drink beer, and shoot at targets. And they probably didn't shoot at that many targets, because back then powder was pretty expensive stuff. So probably mostly they drank a lot of beer. But who knows? I wasn't alive then. But the fact is that when people say, you know, Obama's doing something unprecedented, they're just wrong.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
This is a hoot. This is the Act for the Establishment of a Uniform System for the Government of the Militia. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And Jane in Cape Coral, Florida. Hey, Jane, what's on your mind today?
Oh, you are. Thank you so much for everything. I love listening to you.
Thank you.
And I've learned so much. And I told the person that answered the phone.
Danielle.
That, Danielle, okay. Mm-hmm. And that I put together one of your books and Ellen Ratner's book and Dr. Mosley's The Fast Diet. And I put them all together to help me lose weight, get off medicine, and walk my blues away.
Wow.
And your book, Walking My Blues Away, Ellen Ratner's Self-Empowerment, and Dr. Mosley's Fast Diet.
Interesting. Interesting.
And I love it.
have you read these three, or are you going to?
Yes. Yes, I've read them.
You have read them. Wow.
Yes.
Are you doing? Yesterday, Louise and I had a 500 calorie day. Although at the very end of the day, we ate nothing all day long, and then we had a salad when we got home, and then we looked at each other and said, "Got to have something more." So she steamed two cobs of corn. I don't know if we went over 500 calories or not. I think we might have. Today, so far, I've had each of us, Louise and I, have both had about a cup of oatmeal and a handful of blueberries, and that's been it. So we're trying to do two 500-calorie days back-to-back, but We'll see if we end up.
I had to convince my husband of it because I found the fast diet very, very gourmet intentional. And when you have smoked salmon and whipped cream cheese on a piece of rye cracker thing and, and something else, you know, a bowl of blueberries, something, I forget. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
And it's 500 calories or 600, you know, depending.
Oh, that's interesting.
And so that convinced my husband to go into. And I have one other thing to tell you is Ellen Ratner's book was so wonderful. And years ago in Winter Park, Florida, there was a murder. And B. Gaiman was the medium that helped them solve the murder.
Ann Gaiman.
Ann Gaiman, I'm so nervous, I can't even remember names.
Yeah, Ellen has, I've never met Ann Gaiman, but Ellen has told me so many things about her, and I'm so glad you read her book and found it of value. That's we'll have to be sure and tell Ellen that. It's a shame she's not here right now to hear it.
Yes, she was here there earlier, so,
yeah.
So please tell her, and thank you so much for taking my call.
Well, thank you, Jane. In fact, Ellen is sponsoring the dinner tonight. We're having a book signing, and Ellen she helped encourage Goddard College to give me that honorary PhD, and so she's throwing a party for me tonight for, you know, now I'm Dr. Hartman, right? And so I will see her in about a half hour, and I'm going to take the subway out there. I think she's driving out there. So I'll be sure and pass along your regards. Jane, thank you so much.
Thank you. What a thrill. Bye-bye.
Nice talking with you, and I hope you have a very, very wonderful holiday season, the very best of the holidays to you. We have just 5 seconds here, so I'm just going to wrap this up. We'll be right back. Hey, if you're in the D.C. area, let's get together tonight. Tonight at 7 o'clock at Politics and Prose, 5015 Connecticut Avenue Northwest, I'll be doing a rousing rant about how we're being robbed by the plutocrats and signing copies of my new book, The Crash of 2016. That's Politics and Prose right here in Washington, D.C. tonight at 7 p.m. Hope to see you there. Tom Hartman here with you, Talk Media for the Sane Among Us. George in Astoria, New York. Hey, George, what's up?
Hey, Tom, how you doing? Dealing with any of these things that the Republicans have been doing lately, what I don't understand and what I find curious is that, regular media seems to ignore every single lie that the Republicans tell.
Or they promote it.
Right, right. And
this is even worse.
Yeah, it's almost like they've been, scared into this position of not doing anything.
Oh, it's not almost like. This was a strategy. Google Lee Atwater, work the refs. Lee Atwater was on the Reagan campaign, and his whole strategy was to scream at the press every time the press said anything that didn't reflect well on Reagan and complain that they were being liberal. And pretty soon the press got gun-shy, and they've been gun-shy for 32 years since then.
Yeah, I completely agree. And, I think that broke down for them when we were almost in default with the nation's debt. And that's the first time I saw, reporters asking these people tough questions, which, of course, they couldn't answer because they have no idea what they're talking about.
Yeah,
and
that lasted for about 3 days.
Yeah, but the thing is, it's with every subject, whether it's the Christians wanting to, violate the First Amendment or, the latest thing with healthcare. It's like every argument they have, if you do the smallest bit of research, it's just bogus. It just comes across as ridiculous.
Yeah, and it's a sad thing. Go ahead.
Yeah, I just wonder when, when people are going to start putting pressure on these news organizations to actually dig into the facts. Or I've never seen one of these Republican congressmen or some of the flunkies that work for them, I've never seen a reporter sit them down and ask them to explain their own strategy. Never.
Right, Right. This is where, you know, Jeff Cohen started an organization called FAIR, Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting. And he was Phil Donahue's producer back in the day, and he's written a couple of books about his life in the media. And he's a professor of media studies now over at, I think, Cornell or the university that's next door to it. And Jeff is a good guy. He's a friend. But he, you know, FAIR is a shadow of what it used to be. But David Brock's Media Matters group, MediaMatters.org, has picked up that baton. And they're doing a really fine job with that. So I would encourage you, George, to put MediaMatters.org on your browser bar so that you check it every day and see what they're up to. And then start, you know, liking them and tweeting them and Facebooking them and forwarding them and that kind of thing. And I I'm no shill for Media Matters. I don't have the best relationship with the folks there, but actually I don't even know any of the people there now. But I think that the work that they're doing is just spectacular. So beyond that, you're right. Nobody else is holding the media accountable other than, you know, occasionally I'll rant about them or Amy Goodman certainly does a very good job with Democracy Now. Thanks a lot for the call, George. Excellent point. Jerry in Long Island, New York, you wanted to comment on the third wave political group, this group of investment bankers who would have us believe that they know how the Democratic Party should be run?
Yeah, I would certainly like to comment on them because, you know, as far as I'm concerned, the political advice of the so-called third wave political group, I mean, if it was actually followed by Democratic politicians or any other Democrats, it would end the Democratic Party as we know it. Because after all, if the Democratic Party and if Democratic politicians, if they can no longer be counted on to vigorously defend social safety net programs that they helped create, like Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid, and others, then what good would these particular Democrats be?
I absolutely agree. This is what differentiates us from Republicans. It's what differentiates Democrats from Republicans. Is that Democrats have always been fighting for the average working guy, and Republicans have always been fighting for the rich and the corporate. And the minute that the Democrats start destroying the programs that they themselves created, they're going to be in deep, deep trouble. And this third way effort to try to cut Social Security and slash the social safety net and protect, you know, the fat cats, I think is a very, very destructive thing. Jerry, I totally agree with you. Diane in San Jose, California, you wanted to talk about the fast diet.
Yeah, I wanted to tell you this. I'm so glad I'm going to do it. And years ago, I don't know if this matters, a friend of mine told me he was going to lose weight, 35 pounds. And I said, well, how are you going to do that? He says, I'm going to eat whatever I want on Friday. Then the rest of the time, he was careful. And when I didn't believe it, you know.
Uh-huh.
And when I saw him, hey, he lost 35 pounds, and I did it too.
Huh.
So
now, that's a little different than the 5-2 diet, where 5 days a week you eat whatever you want, and 2 days a week you eat 500 calories or less.
I know. Well, it wasn't. I know, but it was called then. He called it the rotation diet.
Uh-huh.
But I would say I'm grateful to the guy, because I need to lose like 30 pounds.
Yeah. Well, I haven't lost any weight, I don't think, but what I have lost is high blood pressure. So.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. I mean, my blood pressure right now is totally normal. I took it last night, and I hadn't done it in weeks, and it's been an insane couple of weeks with all this travel and everything else. And I thought, okay, if anything's driven my blood pressure up, this is it. And it was 133 over 87 or something like that. I mean, it was just perfectly normal. So, but it was also a day, you know, when I'd only had 400 calories or so. But I think it's that way all the time. I'm becoming a believer in this. So anyhow, Diane, thanks for calling and sharing. Good talking with you. We should I want to talk more about science on this program, not just diets. This study with rats and addiction, this is, in my mind, this is a big deal. I want to learn more about this. There's a lot of fascinating topics that go beyond politics that we need to be exploring more often on this program. Anyhow, thanks so much for being with us. And remember, if you're in the D.C. area, I'm going to hop down on the red line right now and get down to Politics and Prose, 7 p.m., 5015 Connecticut Avenue Northwest in D.C. I'll be autographing, be giving a speech and autographing Crash of 2016. So get out there, get active, and tag, you're it. See you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, go to TomHartman.com.
Hey, friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. EdisonFactor.com. EdisonFactor is a supplement for the brain. More information at EdisonFactor.com. SolarWorld.com. SolarWorld has a 35-year history in the manufacturing of solar in America. More information at SolarWorld.com. Carbonite.com. Automatic online backup and file recovery. More information at Carbonite.com. AngiesList.com. Detailed reviews on roofers, plumbers, house cleaners, dentists, and more. More information at AngiesList.com. Stamps.com. Postage online from your computer. More information at stamps.com. And our website, TomHartman.com. You support our programs, and please help by supporting the people who help make this program possible. There are links to all of our underwriters at TomHartman.com. Thank you.